It's appeared over the shoulders of 1,000 TV reporters. It sheltered the wounded, welcomed tourists, and stood silently while a nation mourned. And unlike most government buildings, it's been sculpted in white and dark chocolate. In this week's installment of Present at the Creation, NPR's Kitty Eisley reports on the origins of the U.S. Capitol Dome.
Step into the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol in the middle of the night and listen to the people who take care of it.
My name is Gary Prout. I am the night leader at the U.S. Capitol building in the Labor Department.
Gary Prout's job is to make sure the floor of the rotunda stays gleaming. He hasn't missed a night of work in 19 years.
Our procedure is to scrub and buff the rotunda each and every night and put a coat of wax once a week.
Sometimes two coats, depending on the foot traffic. Prout goes through about 600 gallons of floor wax each year to create a shine that kicks up into the vast spaces of the rotunda and the dome above. 3 million visitors a year pass through this space, walking over Gary Prout's floors. They've been coming here for nearly 200 years to walk through the front door of America's government. No partisan events are allowed in this space. It is instead a place for Americans to reflect on their history and to gather at moments of great national passage.
The tablet's called the Apotheosis of George Washington. Apotheosis means to raise up like a god.
Visitors usually crane their heads up to the fresco in the ceiling where George Washington ascends to the heavens.
And then right next to him is President Jackson. They attempted to assassinate him right here in the rotunda, but they missed.
They brush their hands over the original sandstone walls that rise 4 stories before vaulting into the soaring dome above.
The Capitol, being a domed building, was part of Washington's strategy to set this building apart from any building that he knew or his contemporaries knew in North America.
Bill Allen is the Capitol's architectural historian. He knows the building perhaps as well as anyone living. And as he tells it, President George Washington first envisioned this Capitol as a symbol. It would echo the monuments of ancient Rome and Greece and suggest earlier republican forms of government. He wanted it to make a powerful impression.
It would be a stone building, for instance, where stone buildings were exceedingly rare. It would be 3 stories. It would be 350 feet long. Just its size would make it 4 or 5 times larger than the largest building then standing in North America. And a dome would set the Capitol apart. A classical dome, it would give the Capitol prestige.
There were no domed buildings in colonial America. Most public structures had steeples or cupolas. So a dome would distinguish the legislative branch. And it would sit on the crest of a hill, the most prominent spot in the new capital city.
You guys recognize that guy?
Secretary of State Thomas Jefferson proposed a contest, hoping to find a design that would become a model of good architecture for the young country. The entries poured in, and America's first president hated them all. The deadline had already passed when an amateur architect, William Thornton, submitted a drawing that appealed to both Jefferson and Washington. It featured 2 wings to reflect the bicameral nature of Congress. And it was anchored by a small dome, inspired by the Pantheon in Rome.
Started again in 1793.
The dome shape also played off a well-known image of the young government. Newspapers often depicted the 13 states as pillars or columns, sheltered by an arched roof, the Constitution. Congress authorized construction in 1793 and hoped its new home would be ready by 1800, when the government officially moved to the Potomac. That proved wildly optimistic. There were few skilled craftsmen in the new capital city. Carpenters and masons had to be imported from Italy and Scotland. The hard labor came from Africa. Slaves were used to quarry the sandstone for the building, then again to haul the giant blocks into place. The wings of the building, the working spaces, went up first, then had to be built all over again when the British burned them down in the War of 1812. Work on the dome didn't even get started until 1818, and by then a new architect was in charge. Charles Bulfinch thought the dome as designed would be too small, so he redesigned it a little larger. But when he took his new picture to President Monroe for approval, he added an additional rendering, a picture of a massive wooden dome sheathed in copper, so ugly, he thought, it would make his preferred version look reasonable by comparison. You can guess what comes next.
Well, the ugly dome is the one that won the president's approval.
Again, Bill Allen.
when the dome was finished in 1824, no one liked it. It reminded people of a washbowl turned upside down. Some said it looked like a helmet. Everyone thought that it was just an ungainly, rather odd-looking roof over the rotunda.
Whatever the criticism, the Capitol had its first dome that would last all of another 3 decades.
We're up here on the 4th floor of the Capitol in the Senate Curator's office. And in fact, we are the closest office that looks out on the dome.
Curator Diane Scavarla sees the dome we know, the dome with the wedding cake flourishes, fluted columns, and arched windows. It's about 3 times larger than the original dome, but constructing this modern version was a lot simpler and faster than building the first. Congress had outgrown its quarters by the 1850s and needed to triple the size of the building. Architect Thomas Walter sketched out a new dome, basing it this time on the cathedrals of Europe. This dome would be built higher with a new material, cast iron. It would also allow windows for abundant natural light. Based on one drawing, Congress approved Walter's design and handed him $100,000 to get started. The old dome was torn down. Its wood was used to fuel a steam engine that hoisted the new columns into place. Then the country went to war with itself. Diane Scavarla.
As the dome was being constructed, the contractors, of course, was purchasing all this cast iron. It was coming down from Philadelphia, from Baltimore, from New York. It was lying there on the east front of the Capitol, all ready to be constructed. Civil War starts. The construction on the two wings of the Capitol is put on hold. However, the contractor for the dome continued work because he felt basically that if he had left all of this cast iron out there on the grounds, it would soon rust. And so he thought, well, sooner or later he'll be paid. He just continued the construction. Lincoln at some point saw the dome being continued. He decided that it was just a great metaphor to be able to say that here was this dome. It was being forged out of the Union. He saw this great opportunity to use this metaphor to really, you know, bring the country together.
A classical bronze figure of a woman called Freedom was supposed to be lifted into place at the very top of the dome on the 4th of July, 1863. This time they missed the deadline by only a few months, and Freedom took her place on December 2nd of that year. The dome was declared complete. This year, Freedom is getting a facelift to repair damage from lightning strikes. The dome she sits on has stood basically unchanged since the Civil War.
It weighs a little over 9 million pounds.
But underneath the dome, last September 11th changed everything. A building that has been open to the public since its inception has been locked down. You can no longer enter the rotunda without an official escort. You can't roam freely through the Capitol, as people have done for 2 centuries. And you can't really stop, look up, and quietly ponder your country's history. At night, Gary Prout says he's using only about half as much floor wax. Kitty Eisley, NPR News, Washington.